First of all, it's wonderful to be here.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's Baruch Hashem. My connection to Rabbi Mimon, Rabbi Shon goes back, I don't know, like 20 years or something like that, right? Something like that. So Baruch Hashem. It's a nachas to be here to spend some time with you. Number one. Number two, these are just my musings, and I'm happy to hear feedback. That's why I'm not saying a drasha. I'm sitting. I'm one of you. That's number two. So the topic was officially something about the role of the Ben Torah in the working world. I don't remember the exact official title. This is something which Baruch Hashem, our yeshiva does have a lot of talmidim which go on to the working world, and we have discussions with my talmidim, many different stages of that process, immediately leaving yeshiva, being out of yeshiva for a while, and different things that they're grappling with, different things that they're thinking about. Actually, the yeshiva is Rabbi Lapiansky. He's actually working on an English sefer on this topic. It's already holding quite well developed in the stages. It's holding the final editing on this topic of the transition from the world of learning Torah into the world of working, the definition of what it means to be a Ben Torah in the working world, etc. A lot of different thoughts, and so that's something which we've discussed together many times in the context of specific Talmidim, or in general, just the message we need to giving our Talmidim while they're in yeshiva, to the thoughts they should take with them as they go beyond the yeshiva. Yeshiva is a cocoon, and it's a wonderful thing to be able to be in a cocoon, but the cocoons are very precious and very wonderful, but cocoons also limit you. There's a certain amount that you can't develop inside of a cocoon, and once you have to get beyond that to be able to really grow and to really accomplish. One of the biggest challenges which we have, I think, is the message that we give our talmidim while they're in yeshiva is the message of the primacy of learning Torah, which we have to do that because that's what a person's supposed to be in yeshiva for. But then the person goes on beyond the yeshiva confines, and you don't have all that much time to learn Torah. And I define myself by how much I learn and how much I'm doing. So in that sense, I'm not doing that much, and that's a challenge. I think the Hasidim have one up on the yeshiva world in this. You know, they never made that their primary message. I think that was part of what they came to respond to this issue, was people who felt they were being somewhat disenfranchised because they're not in the world of the learners. They're in the world of the workers, etc. And part of their message was, you know, you can be a wonderful Jew, and all the stories about how, you know, the simple Jew was the one who really, you know, saved Klal Yisrael. The reason why all the stories are like that is because they needed, that's exactly what they were trying to address, was this the simple Jew who feels that what's his role? Who is he? What is he? And the answer to your question, every Jew is very important. So I think that you know, the Hasidim have the one up on the Litvish Torah world in that respect of how to address that. Personally, as I've gotten older, I learned the Telz Yeshiva. Now, Telz Yeshiva is a bastion of Litvishkeit, number one. That being said, it wasn't so vike from Hasidus in many ways. Rishiva one time told us, give the Hakdom over here. So Rishiva one time told us that, you know, he gave Chaburas one point in time in Tanya. Because, you know, he gave Nefesh HaChaim, Tanya, etc. And he said that they used to learn Tanya in Telz in Europe, that there was one of the, there were Chabad Hasidim who learned the Telz Yeshiva. And one of them said, he says, you know, out of all the yeshivas, Telz was very much an intellectual yeshiva, a lot of the intellectual element of which Chabad was very much into. He says, you're not Hasidus, but you're the closest thing in the literature world to Hasidus. So I'm not like totally out there. The foreign, the Shiridas has a lot of things about Hishtal Shulis and all these wonderful Hasidus things, which you talk about Kabbalistic things. So I'm you know, that was part of my chinuch. Interestingly enough, in Silver Spring, so that, you know, Rabbi Lapiansky, for sure, that's, you know, that's his world. Rosh Shapiro has brought a lot of that, or Vestler, and then Rosh Shapiro brought a lot of the world of Hasidus into the traditional world. I think it's a good thing. I think it gives a vehicle, a message, which is important about the Hasidus of a Jew. I want to share with you a thought from the Alter von Kellum. Alter von Kellum points out the following. He says, we know that Avraham Avinu was the Rosh HaMaminim. Avraham Avinu was the person through his intellect was able to come to be Makar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Extraordinary Metzius of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was the Amud HaChesed. Avraham Avinu, Chesed Avraham. So we have two parts of Avraham Avinu's Messias, which at first glance seem to be two independent, separate realities. Rosh HaMaminim, the philosopher, you know, extraordinary depth of thinking to come to recognize nobody else is able to come to recognition. He saw Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world to the point that Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to him and says that I'm the Baal HaBira. Avraham Avinu is the person who committed himself to the world of Chesed way beyond any individual which ever existed. It doesn't make sense that these two parts shouldn't be connected in some way, but at first glance, what's the connection? So he says they have one thing in common. They took themselves out of himself out of the picture. Avraham Avinu saw a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the world. Avraham Avinu saw the other person next to him. A lot of our focus is about ourselves. And of course, we start out being very self-focused. It's not a bad thing. That's what pushes us to grow, etc. At some point in our lives, the realities of our life becomes outward focused. We focus towards our wives and towards our children, and we sort of like lose. So what am I? Who am I? And part of the question is because we've been so focused inward that we have not really, we don't know how to embrace that reality of seeing outward. But what happens when you see outward is you're able to see the person next to you and truly understand them. You're able to see a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the Bria. That's the machshava that the altar says. Why do I think that's relevant for us? Rav Volba has a fascinating, if you learn Ali Shur from Rav Volba. So Rav Volba's Chelek Aleph was written for the thinking Talmud Chacham, a process through the different shorim of developing oneself. And he goes through four stages. It's four shorim of the Sefer. The fourth shor is as a person goes beyond the world of focusing on himself. And he says he believes that this is going to be the defining elements, the defining point of the person of not becoming complacent, stuck, frustrated, etc. It's when the person learns to see beyond themselves. He said that starts with the process of marrying somebody. Then moves from marriage into the responsibility for a family. Then some point of role of responsibility of Klal Yisrael, whether you're a Baal HaBos, whether you're a Rav, that we all embrace Klal Yisrael. And it's all this idea of being able to incorporate a reality beyond ourselves. It tells the Rav has a shmuz about this that he was asked and tells they were very big in this idea of communal responsibility. When I was in yeshiva, every bachur in the Beis Medrash was required to learn with a high school boy for free every single night, six times a week, five nights a week plus on Shabbos, an hour. Because that's part of your responsibility to care about somebody else. And remember, the colonel was expected to go and learn with Balabatim at least once a week, and I did it for years. It was a half an hour drive from the yeshiva to the community, half hour drive back. It was 2 hours of learning, it was 3 hours plus with Amar of them. And this was, so it's like, you know, you would leave at 7:30, you would come home at 11:30 at night. Because that's what part of being a Jew is. There was, in Tells in Europe, which we don't picture this reality, but the Gifter talked about one time, he says, Shir Ruchem explains about more often, that between the two world wars, Lithuania was falling apart, Yiddishkeit-wise. So the Tells created something called Vada Fatzis Faro, and every Bacher was required to spend time to leave the yeshiva, to go out to a small outlying community and be Mechazik Torah. And Gifter said he spent 6 months in some little shtetl learning Torah with little kids. So when he walked into the city, the picture of where the world was holding, he says, you know, yeshiva Bacher is yeshiva Bacher. There was a phrase, yeshiva Bach, which means this guy just sits on him and, you know, all he cares about is himself. So he walks and these little, like, 6-7-year-old kids were screaming, Yeshiva Bach, Yeshiva Bach. That's where the Kleiser was holding between the two world wars. They came to America. I picture this picture. Minneapolis approached Rebbe Meir Bloch. They needed help starting a day school. Rebbe Meir sent two talmidim from the yeshiva. They were 19 years old. They started a day school. They're 19 years old. Reb Chaim Sihalder Shlita, he's now a Rebbe in the Beis Yisrael, in Eretz Yisrael, in the yeshiva there. He was 19 years old. Rebbe Meir sent him as a Bacher. So to Minneapolis to start a yeshiva. The South African community, Rebbe Meir said, told me them as Bokharim to South Africa to start a yeshiva there, because that's part of your Shema Yisrael Klai. So that was very, very much the stress, this idea you can't just focus on yourself, which was different than all the yeshivas. The other yeshivas that wasn't out of focus, but it was very, the Shira Bark used to speak about it, or Gift used to speak about it, this idea you have to think about other people. But in the Shira Das, it has this question, it says, but you always have this conflict, there's the on me, myself, versus the, you know, I want to grow. And then you have another hand, like, what about, so he says, He says, you know, one of these like, very simple answers, which, like, what does it mean? Like, you know, yeah, right. Well, he says, well, just expand your ani. Your goal is about you, so just make your bigger, right? Includes other people. So now it's about me. That sounds very nice on paper. What does that mean? Right? What does that mean? So the first training ground is marriage. I learned my chassad. One of the things I talked to him about, which I probably did with you also, I don't remember if I did that most days. Anyway, I said, I think the biggest challenge of marriage is learning to see the world through somebody else's eyes and validating that. This couple was like very like logical, thought out, etc. And this woman was very emotional, etc. So he says, you know, obviously, it's much more logical to be logical. I said, that's true. He says, would you like a world of just logical beings? He said, no. I said, why not? It's so much better. So, well, you need the world. So it's good, so that's your wife. Just respect it as your wife. Yeah, it drives me crazy. I says, okay, well, that's a decision you have to make. That there's another way of looking at something which is just as valid as yours. I said, but I said logical arguments have heard, it doesn't work. I said, yeah, right, because they shouldn't. So he says, give me an example. He says, you know, we're having this conversation and I'm looking at the mail while I'm talking to my wife. And he says, you know, you're ignoring me. I said, no, I'm not. So I'll prove it to you. And I repeat verbatim what she just said. So logically, I had to be listening to her. And I said, so what's she saying? She's saying, I want to feel that you're listening to me. I want to be able to feel it. Don't prove it to me. I want to feel it. So I look at you, I focus on you, I give feedback. I said, I love this. You have a person on the receiving end of a phone call. So a man on the receiving end of a phone call, it's like, you know, yeah, I'm still here. Right? The woman is like, oh, yeah, it's constant feedback. You talk to a group of men, you go like, so with ladies, like, you get this head lit, the head's nodding, you know, the whole thing, you know. It's so much more, I mean, it's much more gratifying to speak to women. And my wife one time, she said, you know, she was watching by my son's chassan, tells the chassan says Torah by the Kabbalah's pun, by the chassan's dish. She told her, the lump is. So my son's saying, and he's like, you know, the whole place like this. My wife's watching the video, like, you know, says, it has to be horrible to talk to these people. you know. You know, I'm like, you're right. There's another way of looking at the world, which is very emotional. It's very, and it's good. It's just as valid as yours. To learn to respect that is excruciatingly challenging. That's your first step of going beyond yourself. Okay, now you have kids, and your one kid's going to come home, and he's going to be the most emotional. Like, you're stopping so emotional. Why? Why so bad to be emotional? You don't understand him. Well, if you learn your lesson with your wife, well, you'll learn to understand your kid. So you'll actually understand them, not just lecture to them, you'll hear them. And then you can do it with your neighbor, you can do it with the community, you can expand beyond yourself. So it's a real avoidance to actually make yourself bigger. But when you do that, you start seeing the Baruch Shalom in the world. And so whatever you're doing, whether a person goes midday yom b'yom labadosay adayar, what is he doing? He's doing a phenomenal thing. He's taking care of Yiddish Kindle. He's taking care of his wife. He's a tremendous balchesed. He just doesn't see it like that. He just sees, well, I'm not learning enough. Or, you know, whatever, you know. Like, what do you mean? You're this extraordinary person. The more it says, there's a person, what does that mean? It's a person who's zonum afarnes bonobobanebe. That's what the words mean, the Gemara says. But why don't we see ourselves like that? That's what I'm always. I mean, I sit stuck up a whole ace. Every time, every moment I'm at work, I mean, I sit stuck. That's what the Gemara is saying. And I'm on my way to that. I'm on my way to do stuck up. I sit stuck up a whole ace. Zonim in front of bottom of any basin. Extraordinary Gemara. I think that Gemara should be blazing like across every single balabas's desk. That's what it means to work. But because we were never like trained to think of it in those terms, we miss it. But the more I can be margish my wife's needs, my wife's, and understand where she's coming from and what she needs to have that feeling of that the husband's giving. I was once approached by a father about a young man in yeshiva. He wanted to know information about the young man. Now I happen to know that this young man was involved with a young lady already, and my feeling was that the father was like really late. Like, you should have asked me this question a long time ago, because by now it's not, it's almost done already. But he wants to know about this young man, like his ability to support the family. So that was his question. I said, this young man has no skills. He does not have any degree. He has no training. He's probably not going to say the little Torah. Right? He says, but I can tell you one thing. This young man will do whatever it takes to support his family. If he has to drive a taxi at night and bus tables by day, in the local mission, he'll do it. That's the type of person that he is. He's a balach rayas for other people. He says, it'll work out. On the other hand, there's a young man who had a job already, who was like, wonderful guy, but if he loses his job, I can't guarantee he'll be able to get another one. He wasn't a go-getter and didn't do it. He's like, took care of him, Baruch Hashem. But that message that I will do whatever it takes to take care of you is a statement of security that a woman needs. You could give that to her. You are such a Baal Chesed when you give that to her. And that's what your children need. The children need that feeling that, when we were kids, we had this feeling, our father is like, the next thing next to the Kadosh Baruch. Like, he can handle everything in the world. Like, remember that feeling like 4 or 5 years old, coming back from like some really nice geschmack, called a Moy trip or something like that, you went to the amusement park and it's like, it had a great day, your parents are in the front, you're falling asleep, and like, there's like no worries in the world. Right? That's what a parent is to a child. Somewhere along the way, we lose that. The child loses that, our parents aren't so smart, and they aren't so wonderful, they aren't so omnipotent and omniscious, etc. But that message, but you know what? The fact that the children had that for years as a child gives them an ability to trust. They can trust the Kodesh Baruch Hu. You gave that to them. You're giving that to them. So for now, how are you doing that? By taking a Krayas, Shendes HaKrayas. That's a tremendous thing. So I think that's the first point, is this: appreciate the role that you have and respect it, because we don't really sometimes look at the other side of how much we're not seeing the world through somebody else's eyes. And when we do, it's wow, look what we're doing. We're doing a tremendous thing. It's the first point that I want to share with you. Second point I want to share with you was like a totally different angle. So, when I came to Silver Spring, so I came from Tulsa Shiva. Tulsa Shiva was not a college yeshiva. And so the powers that be were very, very nervous about some of the things that I might say. So Silver Spring is this very modern community, etc. So the first year I was teaching in high school, also. So basically, you can do whatever you want, he said. Just in the high school, there's certain things which are verboten that you can't talk about. So of course that was the wrong thing to say to me, because that's exactly what did it. So I respected the request to the point that I would not bring up the topic. I said, I wanted to tell you up front, if the topic is brought up, I'm going to say it the way I see it. So the two topics which were off limits were Zionism and Kaddish. Like, they were worried about what I'm going to say. So of course, somewhere along the way, one of the boys brings up, Rabbi, what do you think about Kaddish? Right? I said, I'm not against college. He says college is a very, very powerful thing. He said, but I want to tell you something. He said, I want to understand something. When you walk into college, and there's the example I gave was, there's an English professor teaching English. That professor believes that without English, you are a plod goof. it's not a high school teacher, maybe even some of the high school teachers, you know, I'm teaching English. This person believes in what he's teaching. He's passionate about it. He believes that you're not going to be a true, whole man until you have this class. He's selling you a value system. The person who's teaching history doesn't just teach history. He believes in history. He believes that this is important for you to define yourself. And he has his view. And this is a subtlety. This is something which is not overt. The world is sending us a value system message all the time. So I said to Shmuzin, one of the boys came back afterwards. He was, in class. He was in economics class. He said, it hit me. I'm sitting in class, in economics class, and the teacher is really saying the word money like 47 different ways. Every class is saying, yeah, money. It's like they're bowing kurim to money. It's all about money. How to make money, the importance of money, how much the world runs on money, 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 money. And everybody said, yes, money, 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 money. Right? The world is sending us a value system. And we have our own value system. And we believe in these things, that they have value. They have tremendous value within a context. History is very important. There's many things you can learn from history. The ability to express yourself intelligently is important. Other things are very important. And money is very important also. But is that what life is about? Right? He said, when you're sitting in that class and the professor is sending this message, you need to ask yourself, is that my value system? You need to question that. Is what he believes in what I believe in? We might both agree to the item, but we put it in a different place in our universe. A life which is about growth, accomplishments, those type of things is what we believe is important. Within the context, yes, this is a vehicle to do that. It's a very important vehicle to do that. It's maybe the right vehicle for me to do that. And 100% true. But it, at the end of the day, it's a hechatimsa, baum. The story, the mice of the mice of the Chatzkel Levenstein. So Chatzkel Levenstein, if you ever look at Arya Chatzkel, look at his swarm, they're extremely intense muster. His letters are much more benign. Like there's the message he would say for the rabbi, the message he would say for the individual were quite different. But he came to America after Shanghai. He was with the Mir Yeshiva in Shanghai. So he came to America after Shanghai. And after a few years, he said, I can't deal with America anymore. It's just too much tuma. I'm going there to Israel. And he left the Mir and he went down to the event and he came to Moshkech and Ponyevich. While he was here in America, Babe Ruth died.
It's
1948. So one day, Rav Chatzkel walks into the Beis Medrash, and there's this major tumult going on in the Beis Medrash. So he walks over to the buffer and says, what's the Geshem? What happened? He says, Babe Ruth died. Who's Babe Ruth? Right? So he says, now, if the Beis Medrash of Rav Chatzkel, his own daughters said that they had a pocket from him, his Kedusha. So he says, he's a baseball player. Vossi does baseball. What's baseball? Now, remember, the person who was explaining to Rav Chatzkel felt like an absolute idiot. Like, explaining him, you have a ball and a stick, and you hit the ball with the stick, and it goes far. It's like Rav Chatzkel, like, no, says Voss. Like, now what? So he says, okay. So that's what he was good at, right? Hitting balls with sticks. Like, that's what he's known for. It doesn't sound very intelligent if you say it in those words. So he says, what did they say by the funeral already? She says, by the funeral they said that Babe Ruth grew up without a father. His father abandoned his family. So he had a very soft spot for orphans. So he used to go to orphanages all the time. He used to spend time with the children there. He says, and that was the main focus of the funeral. So Rav Chatzkel said, Bacher, listen to what you just said. He said, here's a man, you're telling me, his whole life, the main thing he was known to the whole world, because he could hit a ball with a stick. But when it comes to Yom HaAchron, when it comes to the final day, they talk about the fact that he did cast at other people. Now, nowadays, you go to funerals and they talk about how he loved golf. And I really? That's all you can say about the poor guy? I cringe. I can't believe that people are saying this. But once upon a time, not too long ago, when people were still thinking intelligently, by the funeral, the last day, what are you going to say about the person? Like, what do you want? What do you want in your mitzvah? Rav David Olasky says the story when his father passed away. I'm sorry, this is morbid a little bit. Okay, it's okay. Right? So, like, you know, you familiar with the Dobrolovsky? He's a major less. Turns to Chacham, and you know, he gets his message across. He says, you know, so his father passed away, so he being the rabbi of the family, was commissioned by the family to write them a Sefer. And he's spending time on it, and time on it, and time on it. Finally, one of his brothers says, like, says, Dobrolovsky, how long does it take to write the epitaph in the Matevah? So he said, a lifetime. He says, what do you want me to write? You know, he says, right? Our father's a dentist. He says, here lies Dad. He just filled his last cavity. Like, what do you want me to write? Like, you know? So, there is a moment when we step off the world for a moment, which you realize, you know, I don't want the value system of the world to be my value system. But we forget it. Well, on a day-to-day basis, we forget about it because we absorb it, and we have to stop. Two more thoughts, and then we can discuss it. The Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes that what the Goyim accomplished all the years of oppressing the Jews. The Jews didn't give in, but they accomplished that the Kaiser lost pride in what they are, and that's the Goyim of Kaiser we lost. So when they threw open the doors of the ghettos, the Jews ran. What are you running to? What are they offering you? We have something extraordinary, but we lost that appreciation of the value of what we have, and therefore what they have seemed to be enticing, seemed to be interesting, scintillating. So it was alluring. Why was it alluring? So it's interesting to see like where that took place. Different places differently, but you know, like. Somebody he went to visit Poland. You know, he said, "You go through the countryside over there. You cannot be jealous of the Polish peasants. There's nothing to be jealous of. You know, not financially, and not, you know. You look at the vacant eyes. Like there's nothing in their life. What are you jealous of? That they can get drunk? Like what are they selling? But there was, you know, there was an intellectual group which Kaiser was enticed by. And we need to recreate the pride in being a Jew. We need to recreate, you know, that what it means that the narrative which the world throws at us. I find fascinating. I find it fascinating. I'm not going to get involved in politics, which don't start me on that. Right? But this narrative of excuse me, one area I have about Shuvah. My family is not religious, and the member of my family married somebody that's clearly not Jewish. So I didn't attend the wedding, obviously, and I wrote him why I'm not attending. So he was not very happy about it. And shortly thereafter, it was at some family gathering. One of my relatives called me out, like, you know, listen, you know, you want to do what you want to do. We respect you. It's your thing. But why are you insulting him? He can do what he wants to do. You know what you want. What are you doing? So I said to her, I said, let's get the terms straight. So you're looking at me that I'm this bigot, who's dictating terms to everybody else, and I looking down my nose at everybody else. And says, I disagree with that narrative. I disagree with that explanation. Because I want you to say something. You and I have no arguments. Imagine relative so-and-so is here with us. We were sitting in the kitchen. He's about to put his hand into the fire. What would you do? She says, I would try and stop him. I said, why? It's his life. Let him do whatever he wants. Well, who would you tell him what to do? Who do you think you are? So the answer is, because you care about him. You care about him enough that you want to make sure he doesn't hurt himself. So we only have one argument. Is there such a thing as spiritual hurt? That's all our argument. You don't believe in live and let live either. And something you care about, you don't believe in live and let live. I don't believe in it either. Neither of us believes in that. I happen to believe there's something called spiritual hurt, which bothers me. That's why I said something. You don't believe in that? Okay, so that's our arguments. But let's not define... you can't define my terms. There's a society saying, but we don't believe it. We're mean people because we don't have respect to people's rights, etc. Mean people... Anybody that I care about, of course I don't respect their rights. I care about them. I don't want them to hurt themselves. Happen to me, I define this hurt, you don't define it. But so we're arguing about a little detail. But don't make that the narrative, your narrative. And the society does it to us all the time. You know, and if you stop and think about it, like, what? I said over a story recently. I met somebody, it was in Cleveland for Simcha. The person told me this following story. The guy's a real, you'll see who he is in a second. Okay, he makes Rabbi Shalom look very, very benign. Okay, all right. Okay, that's a good description of it. So this fellow was on a flight from Eretz Yisrael back to America, and there's this woman next to him who's a Israeli woman who's a professor in Princeton, and she's eating a ham sandwich. So she's a little bit embarrassed, and she turns and says, "You know, if I'd known that," he said, "that's the rabbi, I would not have ordered a ham sandwich." He says, "You know what? It doesn't bother me." She says, "What?" He says, "You know, I'm not holding by the level. I really care about what you do with your life. You want to eat a ham sandwich? It's your business. Like, what does it mean?" He said, "Well, I'll tell you a story though." This, I totally disarmed. Right? You know, like, whoa! That's not, rabbis are supposed to start think bad thoughts about other people. That's like, you know, her thought process. You know, right? He says, you know what, I'm not holding by the level, I really think too much about you. I once had a Bachur in Yeshiva who walked around with a major chip on his shoulder. He thought, like, you know, everything, I'm like, there's like always like this, like, visiting me. I was like, what's your problem? Like, why do you have to always give this? He says, because Rebbe's giving me these dirty looks. He says, you know what? You're not so important in my life that I'm looking at you. I'm looking at the guy behind you. He says, really? I said, yeah, why do you think I'm thinking about you? Like, you know, like, why is it about you? You know, it was like, so I broke the ice and we had a very good relationship. So he said, I want to tell you a story. I said, you know, my brother bought a lottery ticket. Okay. And he won. His ticket won. I said, wow, that's so nice. And he threw away the ticket. She said, really? You must have been so upset. He says, yeah, I was really upset that my brother took something which is such a valuable and he threw it away without even checking out how much it's worth. She says, yeah, I've ever had that also. So how about a person who takes 3,000 years of tradition and throws it away without ever looking into what it means? She was like, we have such valuable things. I mean, the woman, he didn't tell me the end of the story, but I could just imagine the woman's reaction to that line, you know? We have such valuable things. We need to appreciate them. We need to, and our society is saying that they're not. The musik of a human being living, that he learns that the goal in life is not about himself, it's about somebody else, and that's the value which we lived all the time. That's ours. That's Kliyosur. Those of them don't have that, and the reason why they're busy condemning everybody, because at the end of the day they're focusing on themselves and they want what they want, and they get really uncomfortable when I tell them it's bad. So it must be I'm a bad person. Kol pesa b'muma pesa. We are the people which understand the value and it means to think about somebody else, and we care about somebody else hurting themselves. And I'm not happy that you hurt yourself, because I care about you as a person. And that's something which belongs to Christ. So we need to be proud of what we are. We're the Amanifter. We have the Russians' relationship with us. Okay, last point I want to share with you, let's open up, is learning Torah Lishma. So, you know, the Nefesh HaKhayim says Torah Lishma means like Torah L'Shem Torah. So what does that mean, Torah L'Shem Torah? So mistakenly people think it means intellectual pursuits. So it's not what it means at all. And the mashal which I give is the following mashal. I just said it over for the ladies now. That's why it's on my mind. Right. Imagine a chassan sends his kala a letter in the days before phones. So she gets this nice letter from her chassan. So how many times does she read it? Once? Of course not. Twice? Three times? Four times? She puts it away. She pulls out a day later. She reads it again. And it brings a smile to her face. It's a letter from her chassan. Imagine she can't figure out what it says. She's quite mitzta'er. She mitzta'eret, really, right? She needs to know what it says. She needs to know. It's a letter from her chassid. What did he say? Tell me. What is his message for me? What does he want me to do? What is it? What is he saying? She'll read it again. She'll look at context. She'll look at nuances. She'll ask somebody else for help. She'll send them a letter for help because she needs to know. The Rishon sent Klal Yisrael a letter called the Torah. I enjoy reading it because I enjoy reading it. It's a letter for my chassid, not for the intellectual pursuit. But it's because it's a letter from my chassid. The Vilna Gaon had a to join the Vilna Gaon's cloys. Obviously, you had to be, before you came in, you had to be a person of caliber to join the Vilna Gaon. Otherwise, it's a waste of your time. I read the first chapter of the physics book. I go listen to Einstein's lecture. It's ridiculous. Like, that's not a good marshal to understand. You have to join the Vilna Gaon's cloys. You had to be Talmud Chacham Mufti. To get into the cloys, you had to learn Torah Lishma. Now, how do you test for Torah Lishma? Like, what do you do? I'm going to learn Torah Lishma. It was a very simple test. The guy would give the person who wanted to join, he says, I want you to read this pasuk and keep learning it until I come back for you. What was the pasuk? The first pasuk in Divrei Yamim. Three words. Adam, Shais, Enosh. That's the three words. So I remember okay. Adam, Shais, Enosh. That's about a minute, a second and a half. Right? Adam, Shais, Enosh. Enosh, Shais, Adam. Shais, Adam. Okay, that's 10 seconds. Now what? He would have the person sit there for 45 minutes to an hour, reading the same post. What's the pshat? If it's the Bereshit of Torah, the Bereshit wrote you the letter, said, I can join. Adam, Shais, Enosh. No intellectual pursuit over there. I don't need it. That's not why Torah is important. Torah is important because it's the Bereshit's message to Klal Yisrael. So yes, I don't have the time for intellectual pursuit as much as I want. I don't accomplish the swords I used to say when I was in yeshiva. I don't have time for that, and I wish it, yeah, wonderful. But you're learning the Bereshit's Torah. That's why it's valuable. It's the Bereshit's message to Klal Yisrael. It's his letter to Klal Yisrael. It's his love letter to Klal Yisrael. And every time you read a word of Torah, you're reading the Bereshit's letter. That's it. That's why it's valuable. So of course it's important to me. Of course I want to do it more. Of course I want to understand it. But it's not mathematics 101, Talmud 101. It's not, I love chess, I love Sudoku, I love fascinating Gemara, Kashas and Gemara. That's true, I do. I also have to like Sudoku and chess. Right? But that's not why I learned Torah. And that's not why Torah is Geshmak to me. That's not why, sometimes I forget it. Torah's Geshmak because it's a fascinating Kasha and Teres. Yes, given. But that's not what it's about. Torah Lishma, because how can I not want to read this letter from a Kodesh Baruch Hu to Klal Yisrael? It's the Bereshit talking. So if we can hold on to that, so we only have a half an hour to learn a day. We only have 15 minutes to learn a day. But it's one more time to read that letter from the Chassan to the Kaddish. I encourage my chassanim to write letters to the Kaddish. So even with everything, a letter is something which you cannot replace. A letter gives you, you think it out well, you present it, and she'll read it multiple times. It says, and one day you come home from Pesach cleaning, and you see your wife with this dreamy smile on her face. She found the box of the letters under the bed, and she's reading it again. It says, make sure your kids don't get their hands on those letters. Right? So I think, it's that message which we forget what it's about, the Kasha and the Teretz and the Rashba and the Hezbollah. I don't have time for the Tadushim and the Rashba anymore. And the Hezbollah, I don't have time to say my Kabur to figure out Pshat and the Rashba. I don't have time anymore. I don't have time either anymore. I mean, I have to say Kabur and Yeshiva. I don't have time either. Between my fundraising and between my everything else, I do. Who has time? If you want to learn, don't become a Rebbe. Just to get a But the value of Torah is because it's Klal Yisrael's special relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, which a Bereshit is sending us a message. This is important. And when you're learning a piece of Gemara, you're trying to figure out what a Kodesh Baruch Hu was saying to us. And the Bereshit made each person's mind different. And each person's mind is going to get a message, and that's the message that you're supposed to get. So if your goal is to understand what the Bereshit said to you, that's really your goal. What you figure out is Torah. Right. what you figure out is Torah. That's the Rashi's Torah for you. The concept of Elul Chaim. One of my talmidim just pointed out to me there's a Rashi and a Chagiga as before that applies nowadays as long as the person in the Torah lishma. What you came up with is mamash Divrei Elokim Chaim. Because it's Torah Lishma. Torah Lishma means you are working as hard as you can to figure out what the Baruch Hashem is saying to you. And not because it's fascinating and it's interesting and you like saying Shiglat Torah, etc. That is about you. So I don't know what you're coming out with. You're coming out with your Shiglat Torah. It's about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Then it works. Okay, so that's the thoughts I wanted to share with you. The idea of seeing the world from somebody else's perspective. Number one. Number two, respecting that allows you to respect the role that you're playing. And seeing it, how valuable it is to other people, and embracing that. The idea of that the narrative of the world is not our narrative, and we should not let them define and control the narrative. Respecting the role that Klai Yisrael has in the world, and and being proud of that. And the Torah Lishma is this idea of enjoying the Torah, because that is the vehicle that represents that relationship. That's the thoughts I wanted to share. Please, if somebody wants to share, question, challenge, criticism. Yeah.
Just one thought. In the beginning, the Rav had mentioned the two things, Avraham Avinu and Amuna and Chesed. Avraham Avinu learned the Chesed from Hashem because he saw everything as Chesed here.
Right, 100%. Romulus Chesed was really an expansion of that concept. He saw what the Dalton and Kellum adds is the ability to understand somebody else's needs and really see the world the way they're seeing it. When he took himself out of the picture, he was able to do that. And otherwise, you can't. You won't see a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and you'll just see yourself. Revolver writes in the Chelik Beis, he has a vod on the meat of Chesed. So he says, the first thing he says, I want you, don't do any Chesedim. Just go out there for the first 2 weeks, and I want you to, three times a day you meet people, think about what their needs are. That's the first step. Push to be aware of other people's needs. So he says that they can come back after 2 weeks. This is a series of vodim which he actually did with his Talmidim. And people reported, okay, what did you see? You know, random people I met, the mailman, and this and that. He says, people basically need the same needs as I have. He says, oh, so you didn't see anybody else, you just saw yourself for 2 weeks. You just reflected yourself on everybody else. That was not very geschmack, right? It was like, but that's to really understand, like, what is this person's challenge? What is bothering him? Or what does he need? Or what does he want? Or she, or whatever it is. We really don't see people. We see ourselves reflected. I had one of my chaverim in yeshiva was the sweetest guy in the world, clueless to the nth degree. One of my other chaverim says, one thing said, so-and-so is such a bach chesed, he'll run to the end of the world to do you a favor. For the life of the man, he cannot figure out what you need though. That was his description of this person. And he was right. Sweet guy, he couldn't understand you. He saw the world from his own Dalaranas. And partially he had low self-esteem and he was always focused on himself and worried about it. He had a reason why he did that. But like as adults, we gotta let go of that. And what are my wife's needs? What does she see? How is she seeing the world? What's really important to her? Rabbi Fran has a fascinating story. He says a couple who did this exercise. They wrote down each one the top 20 things that they thought their spouse wanted in a marriage. So the husband wrote down what he thought the wife wanted. The wife wrote down what she thought the husband wanted. Then they gave it to, and they wrote it in order of priority, 1 to 20. And they gave it to each other to grade. And the husband, looks at, what she wrote as number 1, which my husband wants supper on the table when he comes home, he put it number 15. Etc. And vice versa. And then they took the things and they put it under their coffee table so they could read it every few days, remind themselves how much they don't really understand what the other person's thinking. And start really to learn to understand what the other person is thinking. She was thinking what their husband needs. She was projecting. And vice versa. Well, that's not true. What does he really need? And that was a fascinating exercise. Just as it opened up their eyes to a whole new way to look at the world. So what about the guy next to you? Or the guy in shul? What about your neighbor? The neighbor you don't get along with? Like, what's bothering him? What's really on his mind? I had an experience yesterday with somebody. I have no idea, but there's clearly something bothering him. Like, I was Masada Kudosh Baikasta, and this person was one of the Adam, and there's something bothering him. He's upset at me. I don't know what I did. I'm trying to figure out, like, what, you know, he disagreed with me at this point. This point, that point, you know, he made a disparaging comment twice in the conversation. It was like, he's older than me. Like, I don't know if he's upset. I don't know. I'm not sure. But he ended up making a mistake when he signed the ksuba. I only had it twice in my years, 20 years I've been Masada Kedusha. And both times it was because the aide shepherd with me. He ended up making a mistake when he signed. But both times, I said, there's obviously something bothering him. I'm planning to call him, you know, try to get his phone number and call him. He's in a different city, you know. Like, did I hurt you? Did I insult you? Did I do something wrong? Like, why are you so upset? Like, this is a person I can't imagine making the mistake of forgetting how to write his name properly. He's a cipher. What does that mean? Obviously something's bothering him. I don't know. I couldn't get into it. I didn't have time to get into his head. Right? But it's sitting on me that obviously there's something that was bothering him, which maybe I could have provided or somebody else could have provided. This is a person who has a story he wants to say. I want to hear it. I was telling whatever, you know, we talked about Rishon today. Just, I walked into a store once. Rabbi Shalom is a little bit more than, you know, but I'm pretty outgoing. So I'm in the checkout, and I say to the checkout woman, I says, you know, and how are you today? She says, Rabbi, I'm not doing well. I says, oh, what's wrong? My husband just passed away. I said, really? You know, how long were you married? You know, there's a whole lot of people behind me, you know, like, you know, but tough luck on them, you know. Right? Obviously, this woman wants to talk. She says, we're married for 14 years. She says, Rabbi, he was my best friend. Says, how long did he pass away? He says, 3 days ago. 3 days ago. He says, Rabbi, I need to work. I need money. He says, you haven't time to grieve. He says, I miss him so much. You know, she needed to talk. So she needed to talk. She needed to get those words out of her. She said, okay, I'm going to listen. Now, I don't have anything to do with my life. But right now, and this is with this Goyish woman that is in some store, who's like, she's so lacking that she took a random guy off the street and started talking to him. Zell Pliskin has a story about a guy who's walking through Central Park and he's held up by gunpoint. For the next 20 minutes, the guy pours out this tale of woe, puts away the gun and says, I apologize for scaring you. I needed somebody to talk to somebody and nobody would stop to listen. welcome to America, you know, the year 2000, you know, right? In 2018, like, nobody has time to listen to anybody else. The guy needed to talk. Do we notice that? Do we hear that? Do we hear the people screaming for respect me? Like my kids tease me about it. You know, I walk into the store. I know all the ladies' names. I walk, you know, hello, Melody. You know, hi, Chauncey. Hi, Ben. You know, like it makes their day. Somebody knows my name. Oh, hi, Kathy. Hi, Janice. You know, have a good day, Janice. It makes the woman's day. Why? Because I said her name. I noticed her as a human being. I said, "Oh, it's you're too late. What shift are you working today?" I'm working the late shift. Says, oh, that must be very hard. So no, Rabbi, I like it because it gives me more time in the booth. Oh, great. Oh, thank you for sharing that. You know, you said, why I do what I do. it's besides the fact that I like interfacing with people. I do. But I think about how I can, with a little bit of thought and effort, I can enhance somebody else's day. Why not? And with your secretary? Now, secretary, you have to find the balance, because, you know, you can't get too friendly with the secretary also, you know. Because, you know, that's also a challenge. You have to find a way to do it right. You know? But that's... Aramina saw people. He saw their needs. He saw them as they saw themselves and what they were seeing in the world. That's the goal of Chesed. And that's, once you can do that, you can see Kadosh Baruch Hu also. Yeah.
Rav said that for people who are going on to learn, it's a chesed, you're doing it all day, it's beautiful, but is it still not as good as learning Torah?
Okay. You're touching on a very challenging question. Because there's the answer to that question is yes and no. Which is, but like, you know, welcome to the world of Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit, there's no straight answers. Right? And when we try to make them straight answers, we end up messing ourselves up. There were 12 Shvatim in Klal Yisrael. There was a Shevet Yisachar. There was a Shevet Levi. There was a Shevet Zvulun. Right? And Yisachar and Zvulun, Zvulun is listed first. Right? The Mora says that Shimon Achi Azariah, right? That he's called Achi Azariah, he's named based on his brother because Azariah went to work to support him. So we, Rebbe is Mechabedus Hashirim. There's many Gemoras which talk about the Hashivas of something else. We know learning is the most important thing in the world. I want to tell you, I want to qualify this. I had this fascinating insight. I was sitting in Tel Shiva somewhere. Somebody has to go, please, you know, your wife's in your home. You're not going to work tomorrow. Don't feel you have to stay because I'm talking. I like talking. You need to go to sleep. Please, go to sleep. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm serious. Somebody has to go. Like, you know, you got to go. Thank you for listening. So, I'm sitting in Tel Shiva in the summer. And it's color war time. And the two teams were Zahiris and Zrizas, I think. So this is the day before the computers. And so I'm not part of the camp, but you know the camp is on the Yeshiva campus. I'm sitting in basement. There's all of a sudden there's like three boys come running in that their general had sent them to find Rabbi Reingold to help them find three chazals for their banners about the importance of Zahiris. Okay. So I helped them find some chazals, and they're very happy. Half an hour later, the street boys come running in. Who's Rabbi Reingold? You know, our general says, find Rabbi Reingold, help you find some chazals about Zrizas. So I have three chazals about Zahiris, the most important thing in the world. Three chazals about Zrizas, the most important thing in the world. So they're all very happy. But I was like, huh? So which one is it? So I was once sharing this with Rabbi Landisman, one of the actual lawyer. Tom Chacham lives by us in the community. He says, you know, he went to Harvard Law School, so he comes to Soloveitchik's Shel Shudas. Soloveitchik gets up and he speaks and he says this whole drasha, and he says, you should know that this thing which I spoke about today is the foundation of the whole Torah. So he says, wow, I came, mamish, just in the right week to hear from Soloveitchik the foundation of the whole Torah. He's so excited. The next week he goes back. And Soloveitchik speaks again. He says, and you should know, this point I said over here is the foundation of the whole Torah. He says, huh? Last week he said the same thing. Then he said, again next week. Like, everything's the foundation of the whole Torah. Everything is, from all different directions. Right? Zahiris is the most important thing in the world. And so is Rizus. Now, how does that stem? I don't know. It's not important. Right? That without the meat of Chesed, I tell you just an interesting story. I was called upon to work with a young man. The young man is not Shomer Shabbos, not Frum, etc. This boy, at the age of 12, was the winner of the Pirkei Sim Mishnayos Bal Peh contest. At the age of 16, the boy is not Frum. Right? And the person who was working with him asked me if I would meet with this young man. So I'm sitting with this young boy. He's like, you know, obviously background in learning. He memorized, you know, 3,000 something Mishnayos, you know. And here he is, you know, without a yarmulke, sitting in the basement without a yarmulke, you know. Tell him he wants to go join the Peace Corps. He wants to help people in the world. I said, you know, learning Torah is also helping people. You know, Torah's chesed, the word, etc. He says, yeah, but do you feel it? That's what he says to me. I said, that hurts. He's right. My son is thinking about how I'm helping Klai Yisrael, thinking about how I'm trying to learn good work. He said, Torah, without the meat of Chesed, and without exercising our meat of the Chesed muscles, we don't really understand Torah. There's a Zohar Kodesh, says that Klai Yisrael did not truly leave Mitzrayim until Yichashom Yisrael Negadahor, until they reached the point that they could really focus on somebody else. Not themselves. They weren't ready to Makabal Torah, because the Torah they would get would not be the true Torah. It would be a distortion. So without that process of a person moving out beyond themselves, you're not really learning Torah. So yes, Torah is very important, but without testing, it's not going to happen. So what do you need right now? Right now, that's what you need right now at this point in your life. That's what you need. So in the Torah you'll learn will be a different Torah. and support your life, you'll be able to amalgamate the two in the different stages of life. You know, it's not, you know, it's not about just, you know, the next 15 years. You have many years ahead of you, and you need this training right now. That guy doesn't need the training. Maybe he does. You know, and he'll get it at some point in his life. And each person, you know, it's so I don't have the real answers because I don't know. I don't know why the Russian makes Cheshbon as a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but I do know that there's not one way to do it. And this narrative of that there's one way to do it, which we have in the yeshiva world, is it's a very good message to push the kids when they're young, and it's very stifling and limiting and frustrating when you get older. And it's a problem. Yeah, didn't answer your question. I did. Okay, I think it's getting late. Yes.
It would seem from the last portion of the shiur that a person who, like, randomly comes home and pulls out a sefer has a higher chance of doing it lishma. Because really, at that point, he's doing it for sure, just because the letter is important to him. He feels that the
very
letter.
Much possible, yeah.
Mean somebody who all day long is engrossed in it, really it starts to. But that guy who takes it for 10 minutes all of a sudden has a better chance. Is that not counterintuitive a little bit?
No, I think it's a very good point. You know, it's something which I have to work on. I get to be in the Masoners the whole day. I don't appreciate what I'm getting. And sometimes, you know, I do enjoy the intellectual pursuit of it, you know. And the days where I have to go fundraise and I come back and I have a few minutes and I'm like, oh, it's so geschmack to open it. That's taka, you know, I'm able to, like, get, you know, back and, yeah, that's a difference. I need some air, you know. I need some air, you know. You know, that's a different flavor. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.